This episode is brought to you by Decoy, an acclaimed winery in the Duckhorn portfolio. Make the holidays memorable when you give the gift of wine country with Decoy Wines. Established more than 30 years ago by legendary vendors Dan and Margaret Duckhorn, our roots run deep. From vine to bottle, we craft our wines to the highest standards, using grapes from exceptional vineyards, including from our own estate properties. From our flagship Cabernet Sauvignon and classic Pinot Noir to our iconic Merlot and Chardonnay, Decoy has something for everyone on your holiday list. Ask for us where you buy wine or visit decoywines.com/celebrate to find our wines near you. Whether you're searching for the perfect wine to bring to dinner or shopping for the person who has everything, share the holiday cheer with Decoy by Duckhorn.
Let's go talk about the University of Michigan basketball season. Start to finish, it was a heck of a ride. 30-win season. John Beilein and the Wolverines at one time were ranked number two in America. They pushed all the way into the Sweet 16, and they ran into a buzzsaw in Texas Tech, who was so close to being the national champions in this year and or this year's NCAA tournament. Coach Beilein is standing by live here on the Huge Show across Michigan on the Metro Health University of Michigan Health Guest Line. Welcome back, Coach.
Hello, Huge. How are you?
How you doing? You had any downtime yet?
Not a second. You know, not a second. There was a couple of days I could have taken off, and then my son Patrick was fortunate enough to be named a new coach at Niagara University, so Kathleen and I went in for his press conference and to spend 2 days just you know, being there with him. And those were like the 2 days that maybe I could have done something else, but we've been went to the Final Four, been recruiting, got a few days here to be with the team, and then back recruiting again. So it never everybody always thinks the end of the season's downtime. It's actually much more even busier than your time when you're with your team.
Being at the Final Four this year compared to last year when your team made it all the way to the championship game, what was that like?
You know, I said that today, Bill. I was talking to some people. I said, you know what I did this year? Because they gave me, like, seats in row A. So I'm, like, right across from the benches. Is I looked around a little bit and just say, wow, was that me last year on that sidelines? Was that us? Because you don't, as the coach, you don't look around, take it all in. And I just took the depth of the student involvement, the number of people cheering for teams, the bands, all everything's going around. Coaches don't notice that well. And how they, that you never see what goes up on the scoreboard, all the different videos that they have. So it was cool from that aspect. But Jim Calhoun told me this a long time ago, and I've noticed it since 2013 when we went. It's never the same. Once you go, you hate not going. And we've had two opportunities to go, and we had great semifinal games, couldn't finish it, and it probably never will be the same.
John Beilein, head coach at Michigan, joining us here on the Huge Radio Network. John, when you look back at this season, is there anything that you say to yourself, we could have done this and it could have had a better finish, or was it all about you and your staff and the players gave everything they could?
I think it's the latter. I think we did everything that we could. We had some ceilings we tried to push through with some people, and they really wasn't, they're not ready to do that yet. We had some great, great wins. I mean, I love the way, you know, we finished the season except for the Michigan State games. I mean, we went out on the road. We went at Minnesota. We went at Maryland. Then we went in the Big Ten tournament, beat Iowa and Minnesota like big, right? And we ran into a great, great basketball team in Michigan State, and we're not going to let that temper our season. Yeah, I know it tempers some, but, man, we had a heck of a year, and I think the kids would agree, we'd agree. We got, I don't know how much more you kind of got. I think we got almost everything we could out of this team, and it just wasn't enough.
I think depth, and we talked early in the season, even when you were number two and things were going well, John, my only concern about this team was that your bench hadn't developed and you were playing in a short rotation most, mm-hmm. if not all, the season.
Yeah, I think that was a issue, not necessarily with, okay, they're tired. It was more like when a guy was having a bad game, a tough game, we couldn't get him out of there, either whether it was by just tough luck or he just was having a bad game, he wasn't thinking right. We couldn't get him out of there and really trust many others to go in. And so I think that really cost us, and I hope it doesn't happen again. But we were down a scholarship all year long, and a couple of the guys are just I tell everybody, you know, you got a different type of freshman. You got the Mo Wagner, the DJ Wilson, the Caris LeVert that you didn't see a lot as freshmen. And then you got the Trey Burks and Tim Hardaway's and Nick Skousis and Iggy's that you see a lot as freshmen, and all of them are NBA players, but some of them take a little bit longer. And I think you saw that up in Michigan State. Cassius is playing ready to play right away. Tillman wasn't as ready. Now he's really good. McQuaid wasn't ready really right away. Now he's really good. It's just there's some guys that are different. And we had some of those guys that I think were really going to be good, but this year was going to be tough for them.
John Beilein, head coach at Michigan, joining us here on the Huge Show across Michigan. I thought your comment right after you were hammered by Texas Tech, where I think it was kind of paraphrasing, but we picked the wrong time to have a bad game or have our worst day of the year, something along those lines in terms of how you played that day start to finish against Tech.
Well, you know, you weren't going to get many open jump shots against them. You're just not going to get them. And when we did get them, we missed them. And so a couple of times we missed them badly. And then, you know, we missed a couple one-on-ones and a couple two-shot fouls, and the game was like 6-8 points. And all of a sudden they get away from it. So it was just a tough time against a really, really good team. As we saw, I mean, those two games, especially when they gave help out of that corner and that last three for Hunter, my goodness, there's not a team in the country. It's just a simple mistake by one kid to give help, or they would have won the national championship. So they're a heck of a team. And you can't play the national champion, right, and have a bad day.
Did you look back at that tape and say, you know, we could have done this differently or this, or was it just the fact that you guys weren't hitting the broadside of a barn? I think until Baird had bench time three, you didn't have a three-pointer.
No, but still, they were just a you have trouble keeping guys for 3 years now. They had three fifth-year guys out there that were terrific. They'd been through it all. None of them had been to the tournament before. I think maybe the kid from Florida. They were hungry for this. These kids had never experienced that. And I think their experience, their backcourt was so good. You know, I said in shows ahead of time, between McQuaid and Cassius, and then you go and look at their backcourt of Mooney and Marino. Those were the two best backcourts we saw all year, and backcourts are really important, especially in playoff time.
When you look back at the Michigan State games and the Texas Tech games, and I mentioned that Michigan was 30-7, okay, 15-5 in a tough Big Ten conference, a third in the nation in points allowed. Your defense was as good as anybody in the country all season long, but Michigan State found a way late in games to exploit what you were doing. When you look at those three games, why was Michigan State successful three times against you?
Well, I think we got better every time. I think the first time that we played them here, I think we did not play the way normally Michigan plays. We didn't have the same togetherness, and they did. They really just executed beautifully, and we did not play very well. And there's a lot of reasons behind that I'm not willing to share publicly. The second time at their place, again, double-digit lead in the second half. We can't hang on. And Cassius was in tremendous in that game, and they made open shots. And when we did get them, we didn't make them. And then the third time, again, double-digit lead in the second half. But they made shots, and we didn't. You know, we have McQuaid hit one from the corner with Xavier all over him, and then Xavier's got a similar shot to win the game, maybe, and he misses it. And it comes down to that sometimes. So Cassius's shot that rolled in was blocked by John Teske. And when John Teske got a rebound, it got knocked out of his hands. It was their ball. So that last one could have went either way. So I think we kept getting better. They were just a really good team. They were a really good team. It reminded me, Bill, it reminded me of the team with Valentine and Trice and Costello that went to the Final Four. That was a really good team. No big-time superstars, but a great team.
Do the Michigan State losses hurt more than losing to any other team?
I think we have a lot. We have a great rivalry there. So yeah, they always hurt. But they hurt more because they kept us from winning a championship twice. We could have had two championships we couldn't get, and that's what hurts the most.
From a basketball perspective, looking at this season, and whether it was the Michigan State games, the loss to Texas Tech, or at any point this year, what was missing from just a pure – if you weren't the coach at Michigan and you were watching a compilation of your videos and this was missing from your team this year that might have had you back in the Final Four?
I think experience, just flat-out experience of what winning looks like, and when it crunch time and second half and runs, what is the best thing? How's the best way to get this done? I mean, we look what we lost off after last year. Four of our top eight from last year, and most, except for Xavier and Charles, everybody had cameo roles in that run last year. So we needed to experience the same things that Muhammad and Duncan and Mo did during their sophomore and junior year to get to a great, great last year for them. And we didn't have that. And, you know, that's the hope that, you know, as time went on, they'd get better and we'd have it next year. So that experience is invaluable to understand what winning looks like in the toughest situations.
I agree. Takeover guy in those tight games. You did show it against Maryland, and you mentioned Minnesota, how good you guys looked there at the barn in Minneapolis. But again, I kind of lean towards the positive side here of 15-5 in the Big Ten and 30-7 in the
A bunch of road wins, 16. Too. I mean,
yeah.
I think we were maybe 8-4 or something on the road. I mean, we were good. You just don't do that. You don't do that. Our best teams didn't do that. Didn't go 8-4 on the road. They were a good team. We were a good team.
Yeah, your defense was spectacular all year long. And John, you know, the one thing I always say about you in our conversations on and off air and our all-access shows that start every season, that you coach, and it's more than just coaching on the floor. You know, you coach off the floor. And I was looking at Chris Ballas from the Wolverine.com. He sent out some video and comments when Austin Hatch introduced you before you accepted the John Wooden Keys to Life Award. And Austin's quote about you was, "You led by example, coach. You've done more than just help others. You've changed lives." That has to be one of the most powerful statements you've ever heard from a former player.
Yeah, it was one of those things, Bill, when he introduced me. And, of course, I got my handkerchief out, and I'm crying while he's introducing me because I know his story so well. And then the first time I ever got up there, I couldn't talk because I was still crying from him. It was really an incredible honor to receive that award. I didn't realize the magnitude of it until I got in that room, and there was 1,300 people there that morning for a lot of reasons, that being one of them. So, and to have Austin come out and do that so eloquently was like incredible. It felt like it was your own child doing it. So it was a thing I'll never, ever, ever forget.
Yeah, you stood by him after that plane crash, or multiple plane crashes for Austin. An incredible story, John, that I think defines you as a man, you as a coach. And then you get back to the reality after accepting that award that Poole, Brazdeikis, Matthews are going to test the waters for the NBA. Matthews, I think, based on senior night, that looks like a done deal. He's gone. But Poole, Brazdeikis, what are the odds that one or both return to Ann Arbor to play for you this upcoming season?
Oh, that's a big question. I think we'll know more as we gain more information. They got their NBA advisory back, and now they're going to test the waters after they receive that back. And we'll find out more here in any time. It could be in the weeks to come. It could be in the month to come. And it's a very it's a difficult dance we have to do now, because we also, those are important parts that we, going into last fall's recruiting, we felt, well, we really didn't have a senior. We did expect Charles going to graduate, and so we expected that with him. That's why we signed over by one. He and I talked about it ahead of time, and that was the right thing to do. But these two, we're just going to try and guide them the best they can, try to help them make an educated decision, and then react accordingly. So don't know those odds just yet, but we're gaining more information every day.
NBA advisory, you said they got back. So did somebody tell them more than likely they'll be drafted? As describe for people listening right now what that NBA advisory is that Poole and Brazdega's got back.
Well, I've been doing this now since I think Kevin Pitsnago at West Virginia, and you get these you get nothing back before. They didn't want to put anything in print. Because I don't know why, but you wouldn't. And you have to take these numbers, and we'd actually have the gentleman talk to our players. And these are the chances of you going in early first round, lottery pick, all the way to the end to undrafted. But now they put it all on paper. They tell you the odds of making it. We can get the salaries out for all the way 1 through 60 from last year. And we just give them that information, and it's confidential information, but this has taken a big step up this year that they can actually see it. It's not coming from us or not coming over the phone. They actually can see it, but it's hard for them to do, too. They're trying to do that. There's 21 NBA scouts that vote on this. Not every team does. And it is tough, but it only takes one team to really like you, and you don't know who it is until you start working out. So it takes one team if you're not in that first round. That's happened to us before, too. I've had before, a promise with somebody, and then all of a sudden they called me the day of the draft and the promise is off because we just traded for this guy. Anything can happen, and we got to find out as much as we can in the weeks ahead.
Is there a deadline that is there for the players, or you guys have agreed to where by this date, hey, I need to know whether you're staying or going?
Yeah, there is a hard deadline of May 29th. I think we'll know more a week from Friday, or is it this Friday? We're finding out who is invited to the top 60 camp. The combo camp. Wait a minute.
Pre-draft camp.
Combine. We'll know who's invited very soon. And if you're not invited, that's a pretty good indication where you are. If you are, then you got to wait through that. And it's not easier right now than it's been. I'll guarantee you that because the kids have all the way to the end of May, and you got to replace them. And not too many 2019s are going to wait till the end of May. So it's very difficult, and we just got to do our best to find ways to navigate it.
So I assume you have a plan A if they return, and you have a plan B if Brazdegas and Poole join Matthews and leaving.
Yeah, I think they're very movable plans as well, that you got to be flexible and you got to try and figure out some things. So you just got to be every day try and just handle it the best you can. And we're not the Lone Rangers, but there's a lot of programs all over the country doing that. Kids are transferring. This is a very interesting time, both in college basketball overall, but particularly in the month of April and May. It's a really interesting time of people trying to keep their programs going in good directions.
It's a tough position for you too, John, because you're an honest man, and if you sat down with Matthews and his family or Charles alone or Brazdegas or Poole and you looked them in the eye and said, you know, I don't think you're ready, and that's just an honest opinion, not trying to keep them an extra year for selfish reasons, but if you tell them that, they could take it the wrong way. So how do you sit down if you've had that conversation with Brazdegas, Poole, and Matthews and let them know what you think as a basketball coach if they're ready for the next level?
Well, I think I'm letting the information from the NBA do the talking. I mean, I don't go back. And if they ask me, Coach, what do you think? Or if I say, do you want to know what I think or whatever? And we haven't got to that point yet. I'm just gathering information because, like you said, that is, you could be saying something that you really don't, you're not out watching like the NBA scouts. You're not out watching, you know, 50 or 60 or 70, earnestly watching, you know, 60 to 100 NBA guys. You don't know how your guys compares with the other guys out there. So it's tough to do that. But I do try and compare to, okay, here's what Tim Hardaway did. Here's what Nick did. You know, Trey Burke almost went after his freshman year, came back, was player of the year in the country. You know, got to a lottery pick. Nick Stauskas wasn't even mentioned anywhere and all of a sudden became a lottery pick. You know, DJ Wilson averaged 1.2 or 1.3 points a game and became a 17th pick. You just lend that experience to them and just say, okay, here's here's what these other guys did, not necessarily what I recommend.
Yeah, I said the same thing about DJ Wilson. I didn't think he was ready, and look what he's doing with the Bucks now, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
who am I? Who am I to judge? And I've always said this about any kid, John, with the money that you know you make, the school, everybody, the NCAA. If these guys want to leave college, and whether it's playing the NBA, the G League, or overseas, and they can make a living shooting the basketball or rebounding or passing it, more power to them.
Yeah, that's what you'd hope that they all be able to do that, and so that's why we. It's a very personal time that you have to rely on their families and everything to try and make this best educated. I never want anybody to come back to me, though, Bill, and say, I wish you would have told me the truth and not just let me go. We try and give them all the truthful facts, not what an agent says. What are the truthful facts that the NBA, you know, and I'll call every NBA general manager if I need to, and I have done that. I think I did that on one young man, and we had it all down, right? And so for them to actually see it. But at the same time, so I want to give them that information, and then they know, okay, I got a great chance of going the first round, I got a great chance in the second, or I got a chance of being undrafted, and what do you want to do? And they say, well, I'm still going. I said, okay, I did my job. And that's what you have to do. You have to be able to do that, and if they ask for your opinion, certainly you can give that. You say, I agree with all of them, but... You know, if you think you can do that, this is your life now. It's not mine. And Michigan basketball will be fine. We'll find another way, right? If it's not without you, so you're not here, so it all works.
So, John, seeing that no one listens to this show, your personal opinion on Brazdeikis, Poole, and Matthews, are they ready for pro basketball?
Yeah, I'm not giving you that answer in a million years. I'm going to let the people that draft and the people that sign and the people that give us advice, I'll let them give the example. You know, I think all I know is that every kid that's going to college right now is living a life that is a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and all the money in the world can't buy what you experience when you're in college, whether it's 1, 2, 3, or 4 years. And so that's one very important element, and everybody can't forget about it, but at the same time, you don't know the economic needs or the desires, and you do not want a guy back on your team that's all he's carried about is get me to the league. Those coaches are getting fired like crazy. Those programs are not making the NCAA tournament. So you can see a lot of dysfunction, even in the pro teams, about culture. You can't let anything get in the way of your culture.
John, I don't judge you or your program on wins or losses, but 30-7 was pretty good in getting to the Sweet 16. I look back at how you stood by Austin Hatch. I look at how the team and you responded after that plane slid off the runway down in Ypsilanti on the way to the Big Ten tournament. And I look at you a year ago, what you went through, not knowing what was in front of you when you had your surgery in regards to your heart. So everything's gravy. Enjoy the off season downtime in the lake up north. Okay, my friend?
I certainly will, Bill. Thank you. You got a great show, and I listen to it whenever I'm in the car.
Thank you. And I'll tape that, cut it up, and I'll play it for everybody 20 times an hour.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah, he truly is one of the good guys that I've ever met. He's the same he is in person as he is on air.